Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Lau.
And that's it. I think this is our first No Wayne episode, hey?
It might be.
Yeah, I think he's always been here otherwise. But at least he had a good excuse this time, huh?
I suppose.
I'm curious. You said in the email earlier that it's a Chris excuse. Exactly what is a Chris excuse, by the way?
Oh, do I got to expose the reason?
Uh-huh.
He stayed out a little late on Sunday playing games.
I wasn't throwing him under the bus. I'm just curious what you meant by a Chris reason.
Oh, he's in the doghouse with his wife, girlfriend.
Oh, okay, but, yeah, that's pretty that's pretty average.
But it's sort of like a preemptive doghouse.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's not actually in it. He's just worried that he would be if he spent the night podcasting.
Oh, really? Because the way he put it to me the other day, it sounded like he was already sleeping on the couch.
Nah, I don't know. Here we are just talking about Chris's life. Well, welcome to the episode, everyone.
Yeah.
We'll be sharing other intimate details of Wayne's life.
He only has 9 fingers.
So we should probably say, nah, I guess we don't have to apologize. It is free. just to say that we are going to be returning to a regular upload schedule.
Yeah, it's been a rough summer with you going to school and me going on vacation and you going off to third world countries and things like that. Just been hard to get up the podcast on a regular basis, so I'll apologize.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, I went to Myanmar.
Yeah, how was that?
We'll probably talk more about it in a future episode, but the internet was pretty bad, and we just thought it was just bad because, well, I mean, the country has a lot of blackouts, so you just assume that the internet would be bad as well. But it turned out the cable that feeds the internet into the country got damaged.
Oh.
Yeah.
They have one.
Probably.
Huh.
I don't know.
See some guy in an office somewhere just trips over a cord and shuts down the whole country.
Well, you know, the underwater cables that connect countries.
I see.
Oh, you just thought I meant the...
Well, like, I really didn't know what you meant. So cool. Yes, I look forward to that.
I suppose now that the other obligations are winding down, we're starting to ramp up some of our gaming stuff. Pathfinder is going to start pretty soon.
Hopefully so, yeah. Yeah, looking forward to that.
Although it was supposed to start, last week?
No, yeah.
No, yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, well, I guess we're not playing. So I'm like, what?
Well, it's getting down, I said, let's do it on this day, and then a week of no answer, 2 weeks no answer, day before. Yeah, they didn't see that message, huh?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be joining a Rift campaign in September.
Very cool. Have you done Rift before? I forgot.
Oh, yeah, I used to play in, high school.
Okay.
And I guess you're going to be playing...
Shadowrun. Rawr. Yeah, it's my first time to play Shadowrun. I'm really, really excited about it. Did you ever play before?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I used to play Cyberpunk a lot, so I really like that genre. But I played Cyberpunk back in the 80s where, the future was, cell phones were this still far-off technology kind of thing, so... everything was still wired. There was no idea of a wireless internet. But Shadowrun has done a really good job of kind of updating themselves to what the future might actually look like. There's the web is entirely wireless everywhere, and it's really, really interesting. The setting is really cool, and they have a lot of great ideas for what the future might look like for cyber technology and all that stuff. It's cool. But the system, it's a really old-school style system. Like, when you roll, you need fistfuls of dice to do stuff, and you check for everything. There's a lot of rolling involved. I think for damage, you roll to hit, and you roll for damage, and each of these are both large fistfuls of dice. And the defender also gets to roll for defense and gets to roll against damage, and it's a lot of rolling. It has a very old-school feel to the actual play. Not to say that in a bad way. We tried one test game, and it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I guess we're going quite old school.
Hmm. You were going to go watch Pacific Rim, hey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Wayne and I are going to watch Pacific Rim. I think it's the last time we watched a movie together was with you, watching Battleship.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, you can't make Pacific Rim.
Yes, tears. Because, I mean, come on, I'm in Japan. This movie was made for me and me alone.
Yeah, Wayne had a good point. It was just what you see is what you get with that movie.
Yeah, true, true.
If you want kaiju versus giant robots, then by all means watch this movie. But if you're not into that,
probably doesn't not much look... else for you.
Yeah, it looks really, really cool.
Yeah. I saw a good post on this thing about how international it was. A Mexican director made by an American studio with a Japanese theme and British actors. So pretty worldwide debut.
Oh, yeah, a couple of them are British.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Japanese, too. That little mana girl.
Isn't there one like Rinka or Rinko?
Oh, I'm talking about the little girl.
Like a child?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention to that.
No, that's the only thing that I've seen about the movie on Japanese TV is that this child actress is in it.
Is it the one that dresses up in the chicken outfit in Japan? Let me...
My wife is confirming that that mana is doing the chicken noodle thing, so you are correct.
Yeah. I'm predicting into the future is that we will be cutting all of this.
How could you tell?
Oh, this girl's only like 9.
Mm, yeah.
Well, it seems like she's been on TV forever.
Yeah. She's a pretty good actress, actually.
Okay.
Even by Japanese standards.
That's a low bar.
Anyway.
No. Well, it's time to end this and get on to our topic, which is going to be endings. And yes. Chris recommended this. He thought he loves the plan from the ending back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and before we get into the topic proper, just a quick thing about spoilers. We normally try to avoid spoilers, but talking about endings, there's going to be a lot of spoilers in here. So we're going to try and keep away from any new movies, but if you're really against spoilers, this might not be the best episode for you.
Yeah, fortunately, we don't watch any new movies.
This is true.
We're just talking about Pacific Rim. Everybody's like, no one's talking about that now.
Yeah, right. You remember that Battleship movie? Oh, it's great.
Yeah, 3 months from now, we'll have our Pacific Rim episode.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, argh! Catch it. Well, it's still on DVD. I don't know what it is.
Before it's free on the internet. So, yeah, what Lyle was saying about endings, when I plan a campaign, I usually like to start with the ending first, you know, try and make something exciting and big and interesting and moving and all those other good adjectives, and then I kind of work backwards from there to plan the rest of the story. Yeah, so I thought that it might be a good topic to talk about how to do a good ending, because that's kind of how I aim my campaigns.
I mean, there's different endings that we could have done, you know, the emotion that you feel at the end, you know, what happens to the protagonist, but we found a list on this thing called Hope and Faith, which is a blog by someone named Cheryl Tuttle.
Mm-hmm. We'll link it in the show notes.
Right. And she attended some sort of fiction workshop or class, and they went over these 6 endings that we thought were really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, some of them you've heard before, some of them you've heard with a different name, but we thought these would be 6 endings that you could definitely work with and have a lot of fun with.
Absolutely.
All right, the first up is perhaps the most obvious and most common, but it's the explicit ending.
Mm-hmm.
So the ending that wraps everything up and answers all the questions. An example that's used on the blog is a Watership Down.
Yep.
Other examples could be almost everything else.
Yeah, this is like your quintessential happy ending. If you've ever seen a Disney princess movie, this is it. The villain is defeated, the hero gets his girl, the girl gets her hero, and yeah, everybody smiles and lives happily ever after.
I mean, we could be looking at Return of the Jedi. Could be another one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the... Huh. No, I was going to be wrong there. I was going to say Raiders of the Lost Ark, but no, that wouldn't be an explicit ending. That would be another one.
Correct. So yeah, I don't know. This kind of ending, to be honest, I find it's a good ending, but it's also the standard ending. I tend to find it a little bit vacuous. I like the endings to have a little bit more oomph and a little bit more meaning to it than just everybody ends up happy.
I guess so, but it's also satisfying in that everybody... I mean, we're talking about role-playing games, not as opposed to movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, a little walking out of a movie with a little bit of dissatisfaction or wanting more. I mean, that's a good thing, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. You haven't really contributed to the making of that movie. All you've done is you paid your money,
right?
And sat through 2 hours. With a role-playing game, though, everybody's contributed to the story, and they want to feel that, you know, their hooks and everything is. You know, they get that closure,
mm-hmm.
or if you resolve like half of the players' storylines and the others are left hanging, you kind of feel like, well, wasn't I important enough?
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah.
No, I totally know what you mean by that. Like, it's, you don't want to leave somebody hanging for it. And, you know, I remember, I don't remember what movie it was, but I remember I'd always said, you know, I was kind of tired of happy endings, you know, they're so just plain, that's vanilla, that I wanted to see something with a sad ending. And then I went into a theater and I watched a movie that had actually a really sad ending. And I left the theater feeling so, I don't know, like empty almost. It's like, no, I actually do like my happy endings. I want some resolution. But I think that's the main thing, is that an important part of an explicit ending is that it offers resolution. The questions are answered, whatever conflict is put to rest. That's the main part of it. And that's something that is good for your characters, because that way they can feel that they've succeeded, that they've completed what they've done.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of Friday Night Lights, the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in there you've invested 22 or 23 episodes worth. And, you know, I'm watching that last episode,
mm-hmm.
saying, I don't care if it's a cliche, just, you know, they've got to win the game. They mm-hmm. got to win the, you know, they yeah. got to win the state championship. Because anything else would have been a letdown.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you have a little bit more leeway in movies than you would in other mediums like that. Because there's such a short amount of time. It's only the 2 hours. Whereas in a TV series like that, you've got so much time and, I don't want to say effort, but you know what I mean, invested into it, that you kind of need to have a little bit of a stronger ending to it. And the same applies to games, because there is a lot of time and effort put into games, so it can really suck to be left hanging. But that said, you know, TV shows often have pretty crappy endings. I'm thinking of Lost, and that was an explicit ending. Everybody ended up happy, and they all went to heaven in the end, and man, that ending was crap. I think maybe the advice I would give with this one is that it is fine and good to give people resolution and to give them a happy turn at the end, but don't go to any extra effort to make that ending, because it might come off as just seeming empty.
Yeah, this might be a good one if you're going to completely finish everything up.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a long campaign,
yeah,
then tie everything up, because you're never going to come back to it. And it's sort of as a reward for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if your players are the type that, you know, they do like stories where the hero comes through in the end,
mm-hmm.
and faces the odds, then this is definitely something that as a reward for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if you're going to do this kind of ending, then it's also good, talking about planning ahead for your stuff, to make sure that, you know, all of the different kind of problems that you introduce during the game can have some kind of resolution, and in the time frame that you're planning for the campaign, assuming that you do have a plan for that. You know, don't leave an invincible villain there. You should be able to beat the villain at some point along in the story.
Next up is the implicit ending.
The website defines this one as an ending that is strongly based on interpretation. More common in short fiction, they say. And the example is The 9 Million Names of God by Arthur C. Clarke, which I think we referenced back in our old early sci-fi episode.
Maybe we did.
Mm. That was a good ending. That was a really good ending.
The other ones, I guess, would be the classic Inception. Not the mm-hmm. classic, but... the ambiguous ending du jour, mm-hmm. Inception.
Blade Runner was the one I was thinking of. Is he a replicant? Is he not?
Yep.
So like how'd you do that in a game, you reckon?
I guess there'd have to be some sort of question that's ongoing in the game,
mm-hmm.
or some sort of dichotomy, or, I mean, if we look at Inception, it's like, are you in the dream, are you not?
Mm-hmm.
And then replicants are so human, they're human. So, I mean, those ideas are throughout the entire movies.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think that's really good. That kind of makes me think of maybe it more related to the theme of it. You know, if there's kind of the central question, maybe the like you said, the dichotomy of good versus evil. If there's some way to define this one, but that definition is left unwritten by the end.
No, that's a good point. Something like that. I'm thinking about a zombie short story that I read
mm-hmm.
years ago, and it's called Less Than Zombie. And so it's, you know, from the Ellis book Less Than Zero,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, like hedonistic kids,
mm-hmm.
and what would happen if there is a zombie epidemic going on at the time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they would just kill each other and just like, well, she's going to wake up now. She's going to wake up, right? And just kind of like, sorry to spoil that ending. But, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. Is like, you know, what is happening in this society?
Mm-hmm.
I going into the zombies, you know, has it passed? You know, when somebody dies, will they stay dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the zombies are gone here, but are they gone everywhere?
Yeah, so they could have done something, and then the big test, and then you end the game before that test.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then people don't know if they really succeeded. Or, I mean, I think that this was back in older Marvel comics where they had some sort of spell to destroy all the vampires in the Marvel Universe.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you could cast that spell, and it looks like it might destroy the ones in the immediate vicinity. So you want to know if they're going to rise again the next night.
Mm-hmm.
So you end the game before the next night.
Oh, yeah. this kind of ending, by the way, is used by an evil GM.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you could also have, like, reports. Like, everything seems to be resolved, and then there's a news report.
Mm-hmm.
Like, something happens, and you wonder if was that just some crazy person killing... I mean, I guess I'm going with the zombie vampire theme here, but was it just some crazy person that did that, or are they back?
Yeah, or was it bath salts or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and if you're talking about like the big evil guy, and they kill them off, and you know, like the spirit. I mean, if we're talking about fantasy, the spirit's escaping the body. Did they trap it, and then you know?
Oh yeah, if you finally beat the big bad evil guy, and then kind of afterwards during the resolution, I don't know, the king's throwing you a party or something, and as you're leaving the party, you look across the room and you see his face fade to black.
Yeah. Or somebody says something that the villain, like the villain's catchphrase.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a different person, but they say that. I mean, things like that can help. And then you just end it, and you just, I think the important thing is you refuse to never return.
Exactly, exactly. It's like a magic trick. You can't repeat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that being really frustrating for players during the session, but afterwards it could you would never forget a campaign that ended like that, I reckon.
I also think just because we said the explicit ending, one reason to do it is to reward the players,
mm-hmm.
and one reason to do the implicit ending is to reward the game master.
Okay, I think you're going punishing the players.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it doesn't have to be a zero sum game, but it just this was something that I really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to kind of drive you guys a little crazy, give you a dig.
Mm-hmm.
You may have succeeded, you may have not.
Yeah.
And we'll just end it there.
Fantastic, yeah. And, yeah. You know, that's like I said before, that's, I think, the reason that I always plan my endings for it, because that's my part of the story, damn it. Give it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next up is Unresolved, and actually this is similar to Implicit, and we had a minor tiny debate prior to the episode about one of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And unresolved just means that, as they define it, the main conflicts are left unanswered. So, as we were saying in Implicit, that things are left to an interpretation that could have been resolved or not resolved.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, or some question is still hanging. Here, it's definitely unanswered. And an example that they use here, and I'm not familiar with this, is The Lady or the Tiger by Frank Stockton. One that we thought was pretty classic was the Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And people could say, well, it's an ambiguous ending, and we're not going to say what it is, but it's an ambiguous ending. But we say, well, I guess it is left to interpretation, but there is no resolution.
Exactly.
And that's how we said that. Another one is if people ever rented the DVD 28 days later,
mm-hmm.
you have the alternate endings, and actually the original ending of 28 days later is unresolved.
The original being the one, not the one that they showed in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they tested it, and people said, hey, well, that's unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
We're not happy with that.
Exactly.
So they're like...
Yeah, I think this one also, cliffhangers, falls into this category. And I think that's one of the bigger distinctions, is that Implicit is more, you're left with these big questions about what does it all mean. The big questions aren't answered. Whereas this one, just the things aren't resolved.
Well, I think that's a good example, the cliffhanger versus, like, the big questions, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of a movie that ended on a big cliffhanger. You got any?
I think Empire Strikes Back did.
Sorry, which one?
Empire Strikes Back? Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, Empire... Oh, I thought you said Empire Six-Pack. Is that a beer-drinking movie? Yes, yes, Empire Strikes Back.
So, the big, there are no, like, huge... Well, I suppose, you know, is it the father? But still, I think that's more just unresolved. I mean, there is... I mean, when they kind of hit you in the face with that question.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is it his father, and what's going to happen to Han Solo, you know? Like, sure, they're big questions for the story, but they're not really philosophical, and it's... Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, and here, that's a good example in that, hey, if they made a sequel, and they did, they answer those questions.
Spoiler!
Yeah. If there was a Thing 2, mm-hmm. you would... and I know they did do a quasi-remake of The Thing, but it was a prequel. Mm-hmm. But if they had made a sequel of the Carpenter's The Thing, you would expect, then it goes, bam, here's the answer to that question that we ended with.
Exactly, exactly. It's where you pick up if you left off.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas implicit might be, it just kind of continues along that vein.
Yeah, I don't know. Could you pick up an implicit one again?
I suppose you could, you just wouldn't want to.
Yeah, true, true.
Like, I mean, if there was the Blade Runner 2, mm-hmm. and it goes, and I'm a replicant, you're like,
yeah.
No, I didn't even know that.
Exactly.
Yeah, great, great. But if they go, and it is, you know, he is his father, and hey, Han Solo is alive, you're like, great, I wanted to know that.
Exactly.
I needed that. I mean, the thing then, again, it could walk the line, because I think a lot of people do like the fact that the ending is unresolved. Mm-hmm. I kind of is somewhat implicit, I suppose, but I think it's more unresolved. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of modern movies kind of end on the unresolved thing, but mostly it's because they want to leave open the possibility of a sequel.
Yeah.
The hand bursts from the grave again, or the robot's eyes flicker back to life, that kind of thing.
I think the Romero films, they end, well, maybe not so much Night of the Living Dead, where it kind of seems like it's resolved, mm-hmm. and then he started it up again later, but like Dawn of the Dead is definitely an unresolved ending.
Yeah, yeah, Day of the Dead too, where they have that kind of video montage at the end.
Yeah, and you're just... I mean, is it ever going to go away? Is it just what's going to happen? And and he just kept making other movies, but yeah.
Yeah, totally. Now, I was going to say that unresolved ending is more of like a campaign that just kind of stops because people run out of time, as opposed to one that you want to end with a question.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, and I think sometimes it's best to leave a campaign like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially if maybe the characters have lost interest in what that main question is.
No, that's a good point. Unresolved could be the best of a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is better to just pick a nice point where it's unresolved, as opposed to just powering through the next 4 or 5 sessions just so you can kind of tie everything up.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. This is, you know, it's something worth looking into, the different movies that end on an unresolved note, in that it might be a way to end a game that you want to end prematurely. You know, if have that big bad evil guy, you know, come around the corner and get ready to cast a spell, and then that's where we're going to end it. And you can continue however you want in your mind, but the game is over.
Yeah, and like we said earlier, I mean, one thing about an unresolved ending is that people might want to watch the sequel or to read the follow-up book, too, to get that resolution. And if you have a game that is getting kind of stagnant, then you can end it, and it, that lack of resolution might create some sort of enthusiasm for the game again.
True, true, very true.
And then you can revisit it later when everybody feels a little bit fresher and, you know, the nagging questions kind of get to the people and they're like, all right, you know, I want to see how that's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought I was bored with this, but no. Do we get out of that room?
Yeah.
You know. All right, and the next one is the twist ending. And that is where something is unexpected.
Yeah. And actually, the one following the twist ending is called the tieback ending. And again, they're pretty similar, but there's enough difference between them. The twist ending, as Lyle said, is just a surprise where it's something unexpected or out of the blue. And the tieback ending is where the story kind of loops back into clues that have been planted throughout the movie or from the beginning, kind of like a bookend. An example of the tieback ending is like The Sixth Sense, where there's clues that that Bruce Willis is a ghost throughout the movie, but it's only really revealed at the end.
Yeah.
And an example of the twist was, what were we saying?
The Village.
Yes, yes, another Shyamalan.
Yeah, so I don't know, we kind of discussed this before the episode. Is a tieback just a superior twist?
Yes. And I mean, there is room for surprises that come out of the blue, but it's so much more satisfying to both the storyteller and the players when it's something that's been broadcast. And instead of saying, whoa, you get to say, oh, I get it, kind of thing.
Yeah. We had a good example of the twist, yeah, and that was Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought the ending, there wasn't a lot of foreshadowing. It doesn't necessarily tie back. It just kind of, what?
Yeah. And for that matter, actually, the movie Carrie as well. And I know this is the exact example I used for Unresolved, but where the hand bursts out of the ground. But the difference is that Carrie was still a new idea. It wasn't cliched.
Right.
Blew your mind.
Yeah, okay. Another example of a tie back and somewhat, I don't know, tenuous, but is the Road Warrior?
Yeah.
Because where he ends is where he really begins, or where he began. And I guess a tie back can be really cool to kind of end on that, or a twist is really cool. Because it's just like, oh, and here's a little trick at the end. But sometimes, like, a tie back's really good because it can actually reset.
Yeah.
And the Road Warrior is the Road Warrior because of what happened in the Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Also what happened in Mad Max, but then, like, just stuff always happens.
Yeah.
Like that.
You know, I think twist endings work really well in horror movies and by the same figure, then in horror games as well. Things like Call of Cthulhu or whatnot. Because another example I'm thinking of is the Blair Witch Project. And have you seen that one?
Yes.
Yeah. So at the end, when they see the one character, just to kind of, I won't really give it away, but the surprise ending there, it really shocks you. And it's like we've talked before, kind of the difference between an action and a horror movie is how much control the characters have over their own destiny and lives. And I think kind of that lack of control that's in a horror, you know, things would surprise you. Things would scare the crap out of you. So a twist, a surprise can really work in that kind of an instance.
What was the ending? It's like the guy's just standing there?
Yeah, when they're running through the house and they get down to the basement and they see the guy's just standing in the corner as if he had been possessed by the witch.
Oh, okay.
And that's when the person dies.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I suppose you have to be careful with the kind of a twist ending, though, because since it is coming out of the blue, it has a chance of making the characters, or making the players feel that it's unfair. That because you didn't, there was no foreshadowing to it, it seems almost like it's made up. But we talked about these kind of drawbacks in the Deus Ex Machina episode as well.
Now, I guess the big question here is, do you plan a twist ending from the beginning? Or a tie back? Because then, is it a case where the players had no control at all?
Mm-hmm.
So, or especially the tie back, if you were going to, like, everything kind of goes back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A tie back, yeah, absolutely. You need to figure out what kind of clues you would place throughout the story that would lead to that final conclusion. And yeah, so definitely it's something that you would have to plan a lot from the very beginning. And you know, I think I try to add in some kind of twist or in, I suppose, tie back actually in pretty much every story I make, because I feel it just makes it can bring characters in a lot of immersion. It makes a story feel really good.
Yeah. I suppose in the game, one reason to do a twist is also if you want to shift the campaign a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you're ending it, but you're really just not resetting things, but you're shifting things back. I suppose in the tie back, that's a good reset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your thinking is like, we do like vampires, so. You're playing vampire, and then but you're not playing with werewolves, and then suddenly the person you thought was the big vampire baddie turns out to be a werewolf. So you've introduced this concept into the game, or you've introduced like these guys have been manipulated by mages all along. So there, you've got that.
Yeah, the introduction of magic can be a pretty interesting twist. You know, if it's leading on that it's a mundane campaign to begin with, and then all of a sudden magic is revealed. That's a pretty big twist.
Yeah, and if you think like. You know, sometimes people get bored in a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They accumulate too much wealth. You know, if you think at the end of Conan the Barbarian, where they allude to him being the king,
and
that's a different story. But magic, or if Riddick, you know, if you have Riddick and he becomes the how that ends, and he's the leader of a group, but you're like, that's not really Riddick's story.
Yeah.
So what you could do is then do something to quickly tie that back to something in the beginning, and then have it. Try to have it so things start over.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, I mean, you could have the twist where that person does become, let's say, a leader of a group, and then that's the new story because you want to tell a political story or do a political campaign.
Yeah, it is a nice big reset button, that kind of twist there.
Yeah. I mean, if you thought of the village, and I know a lot of people knocked it, I thought the movie was all right.
Hmm.
It's certainly not, I mean, it's not a tie back. I mean, they just kind of throw it in at the end, the twist ending, but... If you have people who are playing that style of game and they think they're playing in one genre, then something like that resets it and you're now playing either a fish out of water or you're playing a different genre.
Mm-hmm.
You imagine if, I can't remember the name of the the TV series, but I think it was this giant ship, and the spaceship had different pods or capsules or biospheres. So, I mean, you could be playing a game and you think you're in this world, but you're actually on a biosphere or on this giant ship with all these different biospheres. So you've just completely changed what kind of game you're playing. You're now not playing a fantasy game. You're now playing a science fiction game where you now can explore all of these different biospheres. So, yeah. So suddenly you've gone from playing D&D to playing Torg.
So like the Truman Show kind of ending.
Sure. Yeah. If it wasn't like sanitized real world and real world, but it was, you know, you have all of these, I mean, imagine Westworld.
Yeah.
And then everybody finds out, hey, we're robots.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Which is not Westworld, by the way, people. So please feel free to watch that. But I mean, you could actually be playing it. You think you're playing a Western game, and then suddenly you realize, hey, somebody just shot me, and I'm a robot.
Yeah.
And there's a Roman world, and there's a medieval world, and that can be. And then there's this modern world, and that could be the new type of game.
Yeah.
And it might be a nice way to transition into a different type of game instead of just
ending the game and playing a new one. Yeah, that'd be so much fun. Play a whole fantasy campaign and then end with the holodeck turning off or something like that.
Yeah.
I suppose that does run the danger of kind of the it was all a dream kind of ending, making it feel less important. But still, it can be a really, really cool twist.
The final ending is called Longview.
Mm-hmm.
And in the website that they got it from, they talk about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, which I've never seen or read. But nice. I guess the ending tells what happens to the characters in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen this. I suppose it's pretty rare, actually. I can't think of many other movies that do this, but and usually it's not a long-term thing. It's just kind of where it ends. The main plot line will end, and kind of as the resolution at the end, they'll show 10 years in the future or 20 years in the future. I suppose, actually, you said it before, Conan is an example of that, too, showing him as the king in the future.
Yeah, no, a classic one would be American Graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
Where they actually have the little stories, Animal House spoofed that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Raising Arizona had that kind of an ending as well. It's a really touching one, too. It makes me tear up every time. And actually, the Watership Down, which we mentioned at the beginning for a resolved ending, that one also jumps into the future as well.
Yeah, Watership Down was actually given as their example for explicit ending, and sure. Because everything ties up, and they accomplish what they set out to do, and it's a pretty much a happy ending.
Yeah.
But it could also be in the long view in that it jumps a bit to say this is what happens to Hazel, the main rabbit, and then just kind of axe it out a bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've never done that to end a game before, but I think it would be really cool, you know, just to kind of where you finished everything and then the next session is 10 years in the future and you get to play seeing where all your characters are then. Although that said, you know, you just mentioned before about how all the examples we've been given are kind of these happy endings where it kind of wraps things up and resolves stuff, but it doesn't have to be. You know, if you were playing, for example, a D&D game and you finish the adventure at, say, level 6, if you want to do the long view, you could put it at, like, level 20 and everybody is out battling some kind of big monster or god or something like that, and you have that big combat as kind of your farewell session. That could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess the long view is just... Yeah, why would you do that? You just, I guess, as a little reward or a little bit of fun at the end?
Yeah, I think it's a good send-off, you know, if you, especially if maybe you've got to the point where it's you're left with an unresolved or an implicit ending, and that's not necessarily what you want, but it's maybe hard to resolve right now, so just jump the time. Go to however far in the future you need to be in order to resolve the stories for everyone.
Yeah, I think it's it could be an interesting way of doing an explicit ending is that the players have done what they've needed to do, and it's not necessarily unresolved, but you might want to do a long view just to show the full consequences of their actions.
Yeah.
A long view also might be good if you want to show that, hey, you actually really messed up, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you jump in and say, this is really what happens. And you see that sometimes, you know, in the time travel movies or whatever. Like Butterfly Effect, you make this change and then jump back and it's like, oh, and this is what really happens if you make those little changes. So instead of doing time travel, though, you're just like, okay, you think this is what's going to happen? Or they had some sort of complex moral dilemma. Do we kill this guy or not? You know, he's just a kid. But remember the prophecy, and you're like, no, we'll keep him alive and we'll have him join us on this adventuring thing, and he's going to see what true heroes are like. And you're like, great, so did it work?
And that's how he gained his first level on the Path of Evil. No, but that's really cool. Yeah, I think this would be useful as well if you wanted to maybe end a campaign, but not to stop a campaign world.
Yeah.
So you have your characters all finish up, and then you say, all right, so what happens in 10 years from now? Where are you? What are you doing? And then maybe start up the next game in the same world, but you know, all the power players are their old characters from that, though, now as NPCs. We're kind of getting away from endings and getting more into game transitions, but still.
Well, I mean, that's another thing. Well, that's a big difference between, I guess, games and movies, although with Fast and the Furious 6, 7 coming,
right,
coming
Saw
up.
Saw 35.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like movies are ever ending either.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I think that's a good idea with the transition is they can see that are old players, but then they're playing somebody fresh and new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they could actually be opponents of the old players.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they were corrupted, so.
Wow, Longview and Twist, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to try that. I want to try that in a future campaign. Let's just do the Longview ending. Just say, all right, it's 10 years later. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that wraps up with those six endings, which we thought offered a little bit more to grab a hold of. But of course, I mean, there's more classic definitions for endings. Mm-hmm. One that Chris found on Writer's Digest, and it had the pretty straightforward. I'll just list these.
Mm.
The lead gains his objective or her objective. The lead loses his or her objective. The lead gains his or her objective but loses something more valuable. Tragedy. The lead sacrifices his or her objective for a greater good. And the ending is ambiguous or bittersweet. So those are good. I think I like obviously, like happy or unhappy ending. That's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either the player succeeded or they didn't succeed.
Right.
But 3 and 4, I think, offer some nice twists. I mean, I know in our Red Hands campaign,
mm-hmm.
We had Wayne sacrificing himself for the greater good
mm-hmm.
by turning into an angel or something, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, so memorable. We will remember you for, what's the name?
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. Those ideas where you can succeed, but it takes, maybe you lose something that's even more valuable than the success, which, as you said, is the tragedy. And
yeah.
The idea that you have to sacrifice maybe everything, as in the case of Wayne, to achieve your goals. Man, it's cool. It's very, very cool. So descriptive, using that word.
That's a good one, or a good way to have the players just kind of let go mm-hmm. and make a completely clean break. Yeah.
And it can add a lot of emotion to it. You know, you expect to, you know, just fight and win, beat this bad guy or beat this situation, but it's going to take more than just fighting. You have to give something up. Or if you choose to win, it will take more. You know, you can destroy the villain with a nuclear bomb or something, but he's still in the city, so what's going to happen to the rest of the city? That kind of thing.
I think there'd be no mystery there.
Not so much a mystery as it's more of the moral question is the deal. Do you detonate it or not? It's not an actual question you have to answer.
All right, well, that brings this episode to an end. And is it...
Hey-oh, yeah.
It was unresolved. Now people are just like, no, it's just over. Thanks.
We sacrificed something for the greater good.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll have Wayne back in next week's episode, and we will go back to a weekly upload.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping to have a few things, perhaps an insider's look at Myanmar, which is truly a different country that yep. has its own unique problems.
Mm-hmm.
We'd also be going to be looking at posting a survey on the website, which would be just an overview industry survey, so keep your eyes open for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be most appreciated if you filled that out. And of course, we'll be looking at doing updates on the Pathfinder, Rifts, and hopefully Chris will give us some updates on the Shadowrun game.
Yeah, looking forward
to see how those going. I forgot to ask, though, Chris, are you going to be playing Shadowrun face-to-face or over Skype?
Nope, it's not Skype, it's Google Hangouts, but online, yes.
So that's going to be 3 games that are going to be done online.
Mm-hmm.
2 of them are done, I think everybody's in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
My Rifts game, I believe, is going to have at least 3, possibly 4 different countries involved.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be rough with the time differences.
I guess so. I'm going to be playing Saturday morning, and of course, it's exactly when you want to be playing. I think.
Right. Hangover Central. I'm going to play a really surly guy because that's how it would be. Yeah, I keep wanting to play with my friends, but they're only free at night, and my child is awake in the morning, so that's just not going to happen.
Yep. All right.
Cool. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. You can send us an email and just contact us because we always love hearing from all of you. Thanks, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.